from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The East Pacific Ocean historically has been home to large shark populations, but many shark species are now endangered. Over the past half century, there has been a 90% decline in global shark populations due to overfishing and an increased demand in recent years for shark fins, considered a Chinese delicacy and once viewed as a luxury to dine on only for special occasions. But now, with the booming Chinese economy, some 100 million sharks are killed each year to fill the growing demand, which, of course, is a major threat to the world's ecosystem and its fisheries. Each year, since 1990, to coincide with Earth Day, grassroots environmental heroes from six continents are awarded the Goldman Environmental Prize. Costa Rica marine biologist Randall Arau secretly taped a Taiwanese ship landing 66,000 pounds of dismembered shark fins, which represents 30,000 sharks left to die. And as a result of his work, the nation of Costa Rica, once the third largest exporter of shark products, has become a world leader in shark protection. Randall Arau also now works with the United Nations to help bring about a global ban on the practice of shark finning. And the Shark Conservation Act, which would close a loophole allowing a vessel to transport fins illegally, currently awaits a U.S. Senate vote. Randall Arau joins us in studio for this half hour. And welcome, bienvenidos, and congratulations.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and thanks to everyone who's listening to this program. It's quite an honor to be here. Thanks a lot.
We're glad to hear it. We should say a Los Angeles-born boy whose parents are Costa Rican and who's been living in Costa Rica, since you're 10 years old?
Yeah, since I'm 10, I've been living in Costa Rica. But yeah, I like to tell people I'm actually bicultural because I can move quite comfortably between the States and Costa Rica.
Well, it's amazing what you, in many ways, single-handedly did here. Let's help our listeners understand, though, if they don't know what shark finning is. You net fins, essentially, as I suggested, cut the fins off. I mean, this is what's done in order to get these fins, and then just throw the sharks out to die.
Right. It's a brutal practice, and you know, on one hand, it's very cruel when you see the footage. You know, these very beautiful and, you know, fearful sharks are very big, and people are always, you know, afraid of sharks are going to eat me or whatever. But, you know, so it's very cruel when you see one of these animals have its fins just sliced right off and thrown back into the water, reduced to just, you know, meat to decompose on the bottom of the sea. So that's very cruel and sad. But on the other hand, it's possibly the most unsustainable and irresponsible fishing practice that can exist. You know, nowadays we have all this food security. We're talking about the ocean's environment. And shark finning just doesn't go with any of that.
Well, the result, or I should say the prime mover behind this, has been the profit. As I said earlier, the fins are going for about $70 per kilo, and that compares to shark meat, which goes for about 50 cents per kilo. So, I mean, this has a great deal of drive behind it. Profit.
Right. Well, it's very profitable, and also it's a matter of the economics, as you said. When you're a fisherman, one of your limiting factors when you're out fishing is the amount of space you have in the hold. So that's very significant. So if you catch a big shark and you're going to land this great big shark, you know, a 50 or 60 kilo shark, and 95% of the shark is meat, and you're only going to get 50 cents a kilo for the meat, whereas you're going to get $70 for a kilo of fins, it just doesn't make sense to bring the sharks back. You just want to bring the expensive fins. And what you do by doing that is you increase your fishing capacity. So it just makes the overfishing worse.
So you went out and filmed these Taiwanese fishermen and made the film, well, disseminated it throughout Costa Rica to the point where you got people really moved to do something.
Right. Well, I have to clear something up here. I didn't single-handedly do this. There's a whole team of people who work with me. Yeah, a very big crew and a lot of people.
This was your leadership. Let's put it like that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And yes, what we did was, well, we actually have two sets of footage that really put this on the spotlight. One was footage from 1997. A friend of mine was able to get on a longline boat as a cook. So we gave him a video camera. So it wasn't really undercover, but the thing was the crew members didn't know what was going on. They thought the camera was just, you know, say hi to your mom, you know, as we're fishing. And that's how this friend of mine got the incredible shark finning footage, which has been all over the world. The second footage that we got was of this Taiwanese boat landing 30 tons of shark fins. And the reason why this was so significant was because the Costa Rican fishing authorities were saying this on TV. There's no shark finning in Costa Rica. Everything is under control. We have strict controls at the docks. Pretoma's campaign is BS. They're making all this up. And then we show up here with this footage of 30 tons of shark fins being landed that was shot by another friend of mine. And we really put the government on the spot. Something really fishy is going on here on these private docks, and there's absolutely no controls.
Pretoma's, by the way, is Programa Restauración de Tortugas Marinas, a restoration project for marine turtles. And you actually were very involved in making sure that there was a reduced number of casualties for sea turtles, which were affected by trawling.
Right. That's actually how this whole thing started. I'm really a sea turtle biologist. And we were studying the effect of shrimp trawls on sea turtles in the late 90s. And while we were doing this, the shrimp trawlers would tell us, Randall, you're giving us so much hell, you know, you're bothering us so much about these turtles, but the longline industry kills a lot more turtles than we do. So why don't you go work on them? That's how I got my friend on board the longline boat as the cook. That's how we snuck the video camera on with him. And when he came off the boat, yeah, he brought some very disturbing footage of leatherback sea turtles being caught on these longlines and other turtles and sea lions. We were able to see the spectrum of animals and the real impact that this longline industry does. And at the very end of the footage he brought, up comes a shark on the deck. They hack off the fins, they throw it overboard. And back then, I didn't know anything about sharks. I didn't even know that was a blue shark. To me, it was just a big shark. And after that, that's when it clicked. Why are all these international fleets coming to the Eastern Pacific and they're wiping out the turtles? The turtles are an innocent bystander. They're just a casualty. But why are all these boats here doing all this damage and killing the turtles? Well, they're here catching sharks for their fins. And that's when we put two and two together. If we can get rid of the shark fin industry, and if we can make this industry somewhat more responsible, this will be a benefit for the turtles as well and for the whole ocean ecosystem.
Well, you did it. You got a ban on shark finning in Costa Rica. Now, how did you move from getting the footage and bringing it into the media and making the public aware to actually getting government action?
Okay, well, the footage was incredible because we started this campaign at first and we would tell the Costa Rican people about shark finning. And most people were, you know, they didn't really care much or else.
They don't like sharks to begin with, right?
Right. Lots of people would just say, well, wouldn't the ocean be safer without sharks? That way I can go swimming and not worried about having, you know, a shark drag me under like in the movie. But then after we showed that video on the Costa Rican TV, the first reaction of the Costa Rican people was, pobrecitos, which means poor things. And then that turned into rage. We have to stop this. Why is Costa Rica participating in this shark massacre? Why are we major players?
And then the government action began.
The government action began, and this is an interesting story, too, because we're doing kind of like a tightrope act in Costa Rica. We're working with the government of Costa Rica to forbid shark finning in Costa Rica. We have Costa Rica working at the UN, at the Convention for Migratory Species, at the CITES meeting, promoting shark conservation. So you would think, man, Randall really gets along well with the Costa Rican authorities. But on the other hand, Costa Rica is also a culprit. We're constantly filing suit against the Costa Rican Fisheries Institute, the Costa Rican Customs Department, the Costa Rican Ministry of Public Transportation, because we're allowing these international longline fleets to illegally land their products in Costa Rican docks. The Costa Rica law says that you have to import products into the nation through a public facility, but they do that through a private facility, and that allows them to do all sorts of felonies. Not only shark finning, they're also trafficking cocaine out of these docks, and they're also trafficking slaves, who very poor people that they bring from Asia, for instance, Cambodia, Vietnam, and they use the cover-up of these private docks to do all sorts of felonies, and somebody in the Costa Rican government is getting a huge economic profit out of this.
This has been documented?
This has totally been documented. We filed lawsuits in Costa Rica, and our lawsuits have been mainly against the private docks and the shark fin issue. And without our involvement at all, 6 months ago, they caught a Costa Rican longliner that had left one of these private docks with 30 tons of cocaine in the stomachs of the sharks. And only last week, just before I came to San Francisco, the authorities raided one of these private docks and they freed 36 slaves. So this is just to show the cover-up. So I hope that this award will help us make Costa Rica determine what is our true position. Are we going to be the shark champions of the world and leading these processes all over, or are we going to be the culprits? And we need them to be congruent, because sometimes we go to these international meetings and here we are promoting the shark conservation, and then someone comes up and says, yeah, but you guys have that private dock problem, don't you? And we really need to solve this problem. And it's a matter of, you know, the president of Costa Rica could just click his fingers and say, well, this problem has to be solved. We have court resolutions on our side, the laws on our side, the Costa Rican attorneys on our side, the Costa Rican Congress is on our side. So why can't we make the law be abided by in Costa Rica?
We're talking, if you've just joined us, with Randall Rouse, who is one of this year's recipients of the 2010 Goldman Environmental Prize, once referred to as the Nobel Prize for Environmental Activism. They're going to be announced today officially in San Francisco. And you can join us if you'd like to talk with our guests. If you have a question or comment for them, we welcome your phone calls. In fact, let me open the phone lines and invite you to participate in this interactive program. It's toll-free, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. The number is 866-733-6786. We welcome your phone calls. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org, or you can post a comment on our website simply by visiting kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. You're taking the shark finning issue before the United Nations. We've got a bill, as I said in my introduction, that's going before the United States Senate. I mean, there's real action being taken.
Oh, yeah, there's real action being taken, and that's where we've been very successful, working on the international policy with the Costa Rican Foreign Affairs Department. We're also working very closely with the Ministry of the Environment. And what we're promoting is what has been known to be called throughout the globe as the Costa Rican shark finning policy, also called the fins on policy. And basically all we're calling for is bring the sharks to the port with the fins attached. And that's not even enough for the sharks. The sharks really need us to stop killing so many of them. But of course, if we start trying to reduce fisheries or, you know, reduce fishing effort, that's, you know, another big problem. It's very hard to implement this. But this very basic regulation, just bring the shark with the fins attached. If you're not finning sharks, nobody should have a problem with this. And in Costa Rica, this law is being implemented. Other countries have followed, like Panama, Colombia, Ecuador, El Salvador, and now the East Coast of the United States. However, the West Coast of the United States still does not want to abide by this regulation. And they come up with the same excuses that the shark fin industry came up with in Costa Rica. They say, for instance, that if a shark is frozen, you cannot thaw it and then cut the fin off and freeze it again. They're right in to a certain degree. However, in Costa Rica, we overcome this by allowing the fishermen to do a partial cut. So you partially cut the fin, so that way, no matter how frozen the shark is, you can just easily slice off the fin without having to thaw it. Another excuse is you have to fin the shark so it will bleed. And we say, well, that's a bunch of baloney. That's like saying you have to cut off the ears of a pig in the slaughterhouse for the pig to bleed. And that's, of course, absurd. Once an animal has had the head severed or the throat severed, it's going to efficiently bleed. Cutting a fin off is like cutting an ear off. It's nothing but cartilage. It's just an excuse. And bottom line, if you are not finning sharks, you have no problem with this regulation.
Let us talk, though, for just a moment before we go to your calls. And again, feel free to join us at 866-733-6786. Why sharks are so important to overall ecology? I think, you know, the number of people who, as you say, and in many cases even enlightened people, they think of Robert Benchley and Jaws, and they think of that menace of the shark and the music that goes with it and so mm-hmm. forth, or the shark that comes at you when you're going out in Disneyland. I think a lot of people just don't realize how vital they are to the ecosystem.
Right. Well, first of all, sharks, you know, they're not that aggressive. They're not out there to eat you. And accidents do occur, but definitely it's very overrated. And the sharks are extremely important for the marine ecosystem. You know, lots of people tend to believe, you know, an easy way of seeing this is, well, you know, if there's less sharks, then there's going to be more fish because there's going to be no sharks to eat them. But it doesn't work that way. We know now, for instance, there's a very important ecological principle that dictates if you have a diversity of predators, you're going to have a diversity of animals that they prey upon. And we need this diversity in the ocean. Lots of the animals that the sharks prey upon are important for us. You know, they're part of our food. However, if you reduce that diversity, if you reduce the shark diversity, you're going to reduce the diversity down the line. And if we end up with the sharks, or if we finish with the sharks, then that means we're going to end up with very few animals underneath the food chain. And that's definitely going to hurt the economy of the oceans.
Let's bring in our callers. And Paul, we'll go to you first. Good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Good morning. I spent some time in the Junquial in Costa Rica, and I see the efforts there to help the tortuga, the turtle population. Has La Presidente Laura been involved in helping you along with this problem?
Okay, well, I'm really disappointed at Laura Chinchilla, our new president, because when she was vice president, We wrote several letters to her on this whole issue of the private docket, on the private docks, and we asked her to intervene. As I mentioned earlier,
and she said she could have snapped her fingers. Huh?
Right. As you know, as I said, we already have court resolutions. We already have, you know, the attorney resolutions, the general attorney. We have the Congress on our side. You know, all the elements are there. And Laura Chinchilla never even responded to our letters. So I hope now that she's president, we're going to, you know, come back at her. Right now, we're
trying... You get stationery. It says Goldman Award-winning recipient and send it to her office. No, I mean, this carries weight. It really does.
Yeah, I really hope so. Actually, what we want to try to do now is our current president only has 2 more weeks in office. And we would like to try to convince him, look, if you really want to do something for the sharks before you leave office, close down these private docks and just call for the law to be abided by. That's all it takes.
Let me thank the caller, and we'll go next to Orlando. Good morning.
Hi. I was wondering whether or not we have a proper number of sharks. The count that we need as being healthy to have in the environment versus right now what the levels are right now to see whether or not we are off and we do need to have this ban in place. Because if there are enough sharks, but if we don't know how much sharks, we first need to find out this information first, whether or not we know. I mean, the practice is bad, you know, cutting just the fin. But, you know, we also need to know whether or not we are down right now. And if we are, we need to do something really fast. Okay, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Orlando.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your question, Orlando. And it's very difficult to know exactly how many sharks we have left, because most of the shark fishing is occurring in the international waters, which are no man's land. So lots of these countries who are fishing in the international waters don't even keep records. However, the information that we do have from the FAO and from the international databases is showing us that we have a 90% general decline of large predators, not only sharks, but also swordfish. And, you know, all the ocean's large predators are 90% down. And specifically sharks, for instance, some species like the hammerhead shark, they're down 99% in some regions, such as the North Atlantic or in the Gulf of Mexico. So the situation is really critical, and we're already seeing some major ecological impacts. For instance, on the east coast of the United States, there's a century-old scallop fishery. And these scallops are harvested by the locals and on a small scale. It's been sustainable for hundreds of years. All of a sudden, there's no more scallops. And people wonder, well, what happened to our fishery? We're not overfishing them. Well, no, but you wiped out the sharks. And you think, well, what does wiping out the sharks have to do with our mussel fishery collapsing? Well, sharks feed on rays. And you eliminate the sharks, so nobody's eating the rays, so the rays reproduce too much. Now there's a big population of rays, and the rays are eating all the scallops. So this is a perfect example of how eliminating these top predators is eventually going to hurt us down the food chain.
You mentioned the turtles earlier as being the initial concern. What has the work you've done in effect to help preserve the turtle population?
Okay, well, one of the main issues we worked on the turtles is the impact of shrimp trawling. Very few people are aware that when you order a dish of shrimp, they had to kill turtles for you to eat the shrimp. So it's very important as a consumer to be aware of what your demand causes. You know, to serve you shrimp, they have to kill turtles. So I've been working in Costa Rica on a technology that's called turtle excluder devices. Shrimpers are supposed to use this technology to save turtles during the shrimp trawls. And in the United States, for instance, imposes an embargo. The United States will not buy shrimp from nations that do not use these turtle excluder devices. So I've been trying to teach the Costa Rican fishermen to use them, but since they're not using them, right now what we're doing is we're trying to get our imports in the United States banned. So for instance, at this moment, the United States is not buying our shrimp, and we're trying to get one of these bans in Europe. The United States is not buying Mexican shrimp at the moment, and we're actually trying to get this ban global. We actually think that shrimp trawling should be out of the question. There should be no shrimp trawling. And a good way to do this is if we stop eating shrimp.
Here's a listener, Bruce, who writes, I saw a segment on television about a vegetarian shark fin substitute. In taste tests, people could not tell the difference. How do we get cooks to start using this instead?
Well, it's a matter of education. We really need to educate the public. And the issue is the public here are Asians. You know, nobody in the United States or in Latin America actually eats shark fin soup. It's an Asian thing, and that's where we
major
have
major luxury in China. And now with China, as I said in my introduction, economically booming, there's much more of a demand.
Yes.
That's what you're really
Yeah, we really got to work on that demand. And, you know, sometimes the substitutes could work, but people should really just stop eating shark fin soup as well.
Here in the United States, you go to some of these authentic Chinese restaurants right here in San Francisco, and there's shark fin soup.
Yes, they have it here, and in Costa Rica as well. And we've also been working with a bunch of high school kids in Costa Rica, and we've been putting some pressure on these restaurants. We've been doing protests in front of them, and we've actually had several of these restaurants remove shark fin soup from their menus. They probably still have it under the table, of course, but at least they're taking it off the menu, and we just don't want to see it offered anywhere.
You're going to make a lot of people think twice when they want to order a shrimp dish after you're mentioning that sea turtles often have to die.
I hope so, because, you know, because some people then say, well, this shrimp is cultured, you know, it's mariculture. Yeah, but then they destroyed mangrove swamps. And there is sustainable ways of catching shrimp. You know, shrimp is way down in the food chain. Shrimp reproduce very fast. Shrimp should be a sustainable way of eating seafood. It's just the way we catch it. And yeah, you should. Yeah, I really hope some people think about it next time they order a plate of shrimp.
Here's Jeff joining us from Menlo Park. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay.
I wanted to make a comment about the diversity of species population, and to the point, if you do annihilate a specific species, you're taking out one of the peers for our own species foundation. In other words, we're weakening our own species by eliminating the species that support us, and eventually there won't be anything there to support us, and we'll be gone.
Yeah, that's a very good
it's a
comment.
Point well taken.
Yes.
Thank you, Jeff. Here's Lee in Palo Alto, who writes, longline fleets are also exterminating the world's albatrosses, especially in the southern hemisphere. All they need to do is add a simple, cheap device that drops the lines below the level the albatrosses can see, but few do it. And in all these cases, sharks, turtles, albatrosses, there are side effects that ripple through the ecosystem. For example, some regions are seeing explosions of jellyfish populations due to us killing off the top predators that kill the fish that eat the jellyfish. Then the jellyfish wipe out the baby fish that grow into fish we can eat.
Right. I really like that comment because it makes a really important point. You know, here we are working with turtle excluder devices to save the turtles. They're working now with special hooks that won't catch the turtles on the long lines. However, this is an ecosystem problem. You know, here's technology to solve the problem for birds. So everybody's choosing like their own little niche they want to work in, but save the birds, keep on killing turtles, save the turtles, keep on killing sharks. What we really need to do is look for an ecosystem solution. And the only ecosystem solution we have now is to reduce fishing. We need marine protected areas in critical habitats where there will be no fishing. We need to reduce fishing effort. Fishing is overdimensioned. There's way too many boats chasing too few fish and killing a lot of turtles, a lot of sharks, a lot of seabirds in the process.
And the argument, of course, from the fishermen's side, fisherwomen's side, fisher people side is we need it to make a living.
Yes, and the thing is, though, we've been working with different groups of fishermen. When we deal with industrial fishermen, basically we're dealing with businessmen who have a boat out there that's worth several million. They have debts, they have loans they need to pay, and that's their bottom line. We also work with small-scale artisanal fishermen, fishermen who really need this resource to be sustainable because they want their kids to do this, they want their lifestyle to prevail, and these are the fishermen who are really more concerned and really want a sustainable long-term use of the ocean. The industrial fisheries, sorry, but I just have the feeling that industrial fisheries have got to go.
Randall Arouse is one of the winners of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize, given to environmental activists from six different continents. And Brad is our next caller. Brad, join us. Hi.
Hi, Michael. Just want to say I love the show, long-time listener, and thank you for bringing this issue to the general public. I'm an avid surfer here in San Francisco, and even though I have a healthy dose of fear of, you know, great whites, we're apparently in the red triangle. After seeing the movie Shark Water, I just was absolutely shocked at the amount of waste. Hundreds of millions of sharks killed every year just for their fins. And so I just want to say I appreciate you guys bringing this to the radio. I'm coming in a little late, and I have a question about sharks' effect on global warming and plankton. Could you clarify that?
Okay, hold on.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, not really. I'm really not very well acquainted with the whole global warming issue with the sharks. I've had that question asked before at different meetings. You know, what's the impact on the sharks? And the thing is, global warming is kind of like a bigger issue. It's going to take us a longer time to find a solution to global warming.
It has an effect on all aquatic life.
Yeah, it has an effect on all aquatic life. And at least the sharks, we need to find a solution really fast and now.
Well, here's another listener who says farming skates is very feasible. As a former Chinese food chef, skate fins, they're almost all fin, make an almost identical substitute for shark fins. Same taste and texture. Rays are about the same, but much slower growing and too big. Save sharks, eat farm skate.
Yeah, I would say that that would probably work. The problem is people like their shark fin. That's a thing. And, you know, you tell them it's a substitute or it's a skate, and then it's, it just doesn't do the
job. It's a prestige and status thing in many ways, isn't it?
It has a lot to do with status.
Here's Brian who says, what about the Chinese government? Have they been forced at least to acknowledge the problem? Is there any significant movement within China for this cause?
There are different movements of, you know, NGOs are working now in different parts of Asia, but we really haven't seen a strong response from the Chinese government yet.
Harold joins us. Good morning, Harold.
Good morning. It's a great show, and congratulations on your award. I would like the guests clarify why there is such a demand for the shark fin soup. And I think maybe a lot of the audience isn't aware of the myth about shark fin soup. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
I think the myth he's alluding to is it makes men more virile, right?
No, not really. It's really just a status symbol. It was something that the emperors consumed many, you know, thousands of years ago. It was reserved for the royalty. And nowadays, of course, after the communist regime came into Costa Rica, anything that was bourgeois was strongly repressed. And shark fin soup is one of them. But now that the economy is getting better in China, there is 200 or 300 million middle-class people who were poor 20 or 30 years ago. And so now that there's more liberties, well, they're doing better. They're more prosperous. So the way they want to show this is by consuming shark fin soup. You know, show off, show other people that they're doing well in business.
Julio, let's hear from you. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Buenos dias. ¿Cómo están?
Buenos dias.
All right. I'm a native from Nicaragua, and I was wondering, what's the situation over there, sir? Do they handle it like Costa Rica, or better or worse? Thank you very much for letting me talk.
Okay, bueno, con mucho gusto. The situation is slightly different in Nicaragua. See, in Costa Rica, we have this big problem with the foreign fleet because we allow them to land in the private docks of Costa Rica. In Nicaragua right now, there's one public dock up in the north. I can't remember the name of it at the moment, but it's a public dock, and the Taiwanese fleets are not using it. So in Nicaragua, it's mainly a small artisanal fishery. There is some shark finning, but Nicaragua is not really in our target because the international fleet is not there.
Randall Rouse, continue doing the work you're doing. Thank you so much for being here. And again, congratulations for being one of the recipients of this year's 2010 Goldman Environmental Award.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks to the Goldmans and thanks to all the people of San Francisco.
And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and hours repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to remind you, you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or calling 415-553-3300. Another hour coming up. We're going to talk with famed novelist Alice Walker in the hour ahead. Hope you'll join us for that. And also want to let you know who's behind this program. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our producers are Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Lauerberg. And our engineer is Danny Bringer. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.